Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is Thursday, February the 17th. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. And before I get into the show, I wanted to make sure that I thank the patrons of the podcast. Go to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast if you would like to support the show. So I'm going to start from the far back this time, going all the way back to 2018, which is crazy. But Barb and Arnie from 2018, thank you so much for continuing to support the show. Brian, Julie, Ross, Christina, Jen and Nate, Anthony, Michael, Francisco, Tony, Kelly, Irina, Mindy, Colette, Jason, Brooke, John, James, Sylvie, Sasha, Dominic, Enda, and Elise. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. So I was out last week. I think last week was maybe only the second show that I've missed in, 4 years at this point. I got a little bit of a cold from my youngest daughter, and then I was kind of teetering at the beginning of last week, like, is this going to go okay? And I'm not going to end up getting like a full-blown illness, because I haven't even had a cold since pre-COVID, I think, since before any of this stuff started. I went and I had a killer workout, a whole bunch of cleans, a whole bunch of front squats, a whole bunch of heavy pulls. And then about an hour after that, I teetered the wrong way and I should have just chilled or did something a little bit less strenuous. And that evolved into a terrible sinus infection, yellow mucus, blood, all that kind of stuff. So I'm on the mend now, and I was prescribed a Z-Pack, which didn't seem like it really worked as much as I'd hoped that it, or as well as I'd hoped that it would. But somebody had recommended a neti pot, so shout out to you if that was you. I've always tried those things, and I've always chickened out. It's always kind of like the feeling of drowning, and so I've always backed out. But this time, I hung in there and I stuck with it, and it's worked marvelously. So it's done really, really well. So as you can hear in my voice, I'm not fully back yet. Next week, I anticipate that. Actually, I have a podcast interview to do tomorrow. So hopefully I will sound in tip-top shape by then. So today's episode is actually from Whitney Wood's podcast that aired a few weeks ago. And the name of her show, you can find it on Spotify, is Wisdom and Wellness with Wit. And she is a singer. She's a church singer. And we've been talking for a long time, and she'd asked me if I would be on her podcast. And I said, I have to make sure that you know, that I'm not a religious person at all. That's not me. Is that okay? And she wanted to talk about TMS and John Sarno and chronic pain and all that kind of stuff. So that is what the interview is about. And she was gracious enough to let me use the audio for this week's episode. I got a DM from a listener last week, and they said, hey, is there any new episodes that have aired? Did something happen? Are you okay? And I assured her that I was okay, and that a new episode would be airing next week. And actually, I gave her the link to the Spotify one, because this aired on Spotify weeks ago with on Whitney's show. And so they listened to it. They said it was one of the best ones they've ever heard. So maybe that bodes well for today's interview. So I hope you all enjoy this. Again, this is Whitney interviewing me. And I hope that you all get a kick out of this. I will see you all next week. Hope you have a great rest of the week. Be sure to leave an iTunes review. More on that later. Be sure to leave an Apple Podcast review if you're listening on an Apple device. If you have any questions, of course, you can always email me, eddie@themindandfitnesspodcast.com. Thank you all so much.
All right. Well, Eddie, thank you so much for doing this with me. I'm very excited. So I just came to know you a little bit. I started my TMS journey with some different physical symptoms that I had been having. And I found you, I forget if I found you through Nicole or if I found you, I actually might have found you before I found her. And it was just an interesting thing to start hearing you tell your story about, you know, I'm an athlete as well. So it was really cool to kind of hear somebody talk about being an athlete, experiencing some things going on in their life, and then learning actually how to find some relief in it. So, but yeah, thank you for taking this time. I'm a big fan of yours, and I've learned a lot already. The resources that you have on this subject are just honestly amazing. So thank you for being here.
Yeah. Thank you for the invite. I've been looking forward to this all week.
Dude. Yeah. Yeah. So, can we just start off? I would love to just have you tell a little bit of your story when it comes to, can we first start off with, can you just explain what is TMS?
Yeah. So in its most simplistic form, TMS, my interpretation, because here's the thing that I've learned over the last few years is that a lot of people in this space use different terminology and explain it in different ways, but we're all really saying the same stuff. So, but really how I see it is essentially an overactivated, overhyped nervous system. That's really how I think about it, which I think a lot more people can relate to because they can think about things like what's the purpose of things like yoga and meditation and really just overall like chilling out the nervous system. I think what confuses people when you do go down that path, though, is that they sort of think of it as like a checks and balances thing and that they can like out yoga pain or out meditate pain or whatever. And that's not really what it is. But the Dr. Sarno definition, which I don't know if any of your listeners know who Dr. Sarno is, but famous medical doctor from NYU, passed away actually about 3 or 4 days before I found this work, which was kind of just weird. How the universe worked out. But his explanation was that repressed emotions cause oxygen deprivation to certain types of tissue. Could be muscle, could be nerve, could be tendon. So different tissue in the body and could manifest itself. His thought would evolve over time. Like he wrote a book in the late 80s, the early 90s, the late 90s, and then like 2010-ish, I think. And you can kind of see this evolution of how he talks about it over time, because in the beginning it was largely about low back pain and that was kind of it. And then he came to another book and he started talking about things like IBS and things like chronic headaches and things like more back pain. But then he wrote the Mind Body Prescription, which was in the late 90s, and this was 2020 did a special on him, I think, in 99. And they had Howard Stern on it, they had John Stossel on it, they had kind of a lot of these people that were in the public eye that nobody knew that these people had these chronic health issues. And that book, I think, was really what kind of busted it open to it's sort of the mother load. It's like it could be your wrist. It could be IBS. It could be thoracic outlet syndrome. It could be. So it was just kind of on and on and on. So that's how I see it anyway, is a overly jacked up nervous system that needs to chill out. But the actual way to do that is not how I think people have been trying for a long time.
Yeah. And I know a little bit of your story, and of course I would love for you to share a little bit of it, but when you came to finding Sarno, had you tried like every other thing, and were you in a place of feeling open? Because I remember I read it and I was like, what? Like, it blew my mind at first, and it was actually pretty overwhelming for me at first. So I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, you gotta be kidding me. So what was your like initial reaction when you heard about like TMS and just any of this work?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I had been, and I found this to be true with people that I interviewed. There's sort of like this like pre-TMS life and post-TMS life kind of where, and there's always seems to be like this one specific event, like they can point to and say on this year, maybe even in this month or this day, the pain got so bad I couldn't ignore it anymore. So that's kind of where I see that. Yeah. And for me, I kind of see like late 2015, I train Olympic style weightlifting, the snatch and the clean and jerk, and that's my sport. And I was training for a competition that was to occur in January. We're in October at this point, and I dislocated my shoulder in training. It hurt a lot. I finished the session. A couple of days went by. I went and saw a doctor. He said, I think everything's probably fine. I went back to training, and it was kind of like for a couple of months, it was just sort of tentative. I was taking a lot of painkillers because it hurt so bad, but the best response that I could get was, well, I don't know what it is. I went and had an MRI done. I took the MRI results to three different doctors, and I got three different answers on what it could be. Ultimately, ended up settling and having my shoulder rebuilt the following April. So I had a labrum repair, a rotator cuff repair. I had broken my arm. So like there was a lot that went into that surgery. Like it was kind of a mess. Yeah. And I woke up. I'd never had a surgery before. I woke up and I felt like, okay, I can get back to training here soon. I just have to go through the rehab process. And the doctor had said like probably about 10 months to be able to get back to your sport. And I just, I rehabbed like a machine, which that's kind of a Sarno thing too, is like a perfectionist personality. How can we go, how can we take something too far?
Right.
And kind of always try and be a perfectionist, and whether that's being the perfect rehab patient or the perfect employee or the perfect singer or whatever the case is. So, I got cleared. So it was supposed to take 10 months. I got cleared in 4 months and 28 days. And, so like really, I mean, I was doing two sessions a day, 7 days a week, and I was seeing a rehab guy 3 days a week to have assistance with this. I got cleared, I think on, it was probably a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and Thursday I started just having, like massive spasming throughout my neck and my back. And, I went back and saw my surgeon. I said, I felt like maybe I blew my repair. He did this strength test that I had failed previously with my shoulder. And I passed all those, and he's like, I don't think it's that. I don't know what's going on. And, what this began was a cascade of like 9 or 10 months of just seeing different doctors and specialists. So I saw 25 professionals over that 9 or 10 month period. And got a variety of different diagnoses. I had a neck operation. I had so I was spending a lot. I mean, I bet I spent $20,000 out of pocket probably in that 10 months.
Yeah.
The prevailing guess was that it was something called thoracic outlet syndrome, which primarily is it's very rare. So the upper part of the spine, some people, it's like 1% of people, like very rare, have what's called a cervical rib, and that extra rib will kind of clench down on the neurovascular bundle that's coming out of your neck. Again, very rare. This anatomically does not really happen. And then there's and for people like that, they can get that cervical rib removed, and that's the end of the story. Sarno addresses this in his book. For me, I didn't have that extra cervical rib. And so, but what they were saying was that this over muscle tension is causing all of these issues. So I went to Montana. I live in Seattle. I went to Montana. I had a neck operation done. I felt worse coming out of that, which is a stinger of a bill when you get it a month later that you now hurt worse.
And you're like, it didn't work.
Yeah, exactly. So, but then there was a really, it's kind of funny how it happened. There was a news story around here that at our big zoo, two chimps got into this fight, and they were taken to who was known as like the best orthopedic doctor in the area. Dr. Kimberly Harmon, who's the head physician for our University of Washington Huskies football team also. The article was about how one of the chimps tore their ACL and she had non-operatively been able to solve their problems. And I was like, okay, I'm done with the knife and I'm done with procedures and all that. So I called her office and they were like, yeah, she's got 6 months of a wait list. And so I'm like, okay, well, just put me on the wait list. They called me like 2 days later. Hey, we have a cancellation. If you can get here in an hour, you can see her. And I'm like, dropped everything at work, canceled all my appointments. And I went down there. I took my my MRI results, which had suggested I had gotten a referral for a neurosurgeon to see because of some of the stuff that was popping up on my EMG results. And I had her take a look at that. She was the first doctor that really kind of sat down and gave me more than like 10 minutes. And so that was pretty big. Did strength tests. She evaluated me physically. She looked at all the imaging. She started asking me about like stress in my life. And I thought she was just totally out of left field and had asked, you know, but I have these EMG results and they say there's an issue. And her exact response was, I don't care what these tests say. And she started going in and talking about like athletes on the football team where you have somebody who's a high achiever. Let's just, for an example, say like a wide receiver who usually has like 10 catches and 100 yards and a couple touchdowns every game. Yeah. And then they come in and they just sort of lay an egg on a game. They have a couple of drops. They don't score. They have kind of all this stuff. And she said that after that game, she sends them to the sports psychologist because inevitably they will start having injuries or issues that start popping up shortly then after. Yeah. And I left that appointment I had a referral, you know, or not a referral note, a prescription note with no painkillers on it. That was the first time that had happened in a long time. And it was the number for the sports psychologist who I didn't end up working with, but it just kind of got things spinning in my brain a little bit. A couple weeks later, just a suggested purchase on Amazon was Healing Back Pain by Sarno. And I clicked on the reviews. There was 2,500 reviews or something. And it was some of the wildest stories, like people saying that they had, you know, they had six disc herniations and they read this book and they kind of did what he suggests in there. And, you know, they were out of pain and they didn't have the chronicity anymore and stuff like that. So that's kind of that's really sort of where it all started. And it, you know, there's been ebbs and flows since then, but that was in 2017 and it was a big change.
Wow. I have to ask before I keep going, does it ever get like tiring telling your story? Because I know you've shared it a lot.
Yeah. So it's funny, about 10 minutes before this rolled, I was like, am I telling this story again?
I'm sure. Yeah. No, I'm totally sure.
but we're only, I mean, we've only been recording for 11 minutes and it's easy enough. It's easy enough to get through. And it seems like every time that I say it, something new pops in my head that I either forgot to tell previously or didn't. So, you know, it is what it is. Yeah.
No. Well, and I find your story amazing because, so, I mean, you have like a physical injury and then you have on a scan, you have a structural to show like that there is issues. You do go, you use the, you know, the normal medical model and you get the recommended treatment and then it still doesn't work. But I find that so fascinating because my story is I've never been given anything structural. So like, you know, Lyme's disease, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. I have, I was told I had arthritis, you know, in like my shoulders and my hips and different areas of my body. And so for me, it's been this journey of nothing necessarily like showing up on a scan, you know? So it's, I think it's just cool to show how it can show up so differently, right? Like, so and through you, I found my therapist.
Oh, great.
Who I'm obsessed with. And I call her my best friend. She's from the Pain Psychology Center.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Yes. So I mean, I love her. And so I, you know, I've just been learning so many things just in this whole world. But yeah, so I think your story has been so interesting to me. And I know there's so many people out there as well. But it's you. I mean, you had the surgery. You did have these diagnoses. And so what was that like for you to then, I get it. Like you were at the end of the road, like same. I mean, I've been to at least 40 plus doctors. I've probably spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in the last 7 years, you know, cortisone shots and getting everything looked at, getting every supplement, getting every type of, you know, modality you can try. So I get it being at the end of your rope. And so just being willing to try anything new, but was that hard to make that transition from actually seeing it on a scan and like seeing that, like, no, like this was torn. There's an actual tear. So that makes sense that there's pain.
Yeah. I mean, by the time that I got to finding Sarno's book, I don't know what it was. Cause I'm, just as a human being, I'm fairly skeptical about a lot of things and relatively pessimistic about things. Yeah. This has evolved as I've gotten into my, my mid 30s, my astute years. I find that to be less and less so. But when I found all this stuff, I was 30 and still very much in the realm of like pessimist about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I bet if you would have handed me that book a year prior, I would have like said, no way, there's no way, no how. One really challenging thing about athletics is that you're almost like too in tune with your body. And, you know, you do like, and if you've ever done any sort of weight training or anything like that, like, you just kind of have an expectation of how things should feel, how things should work. And if there's anything that's amiss, it's very troublesome. So to be honest, no. I mean, not right. Because when I started, I probably read Sarno's book in 3 days or something like that.
Yeah.
And by night one or maybe night two, I felt such a drastic reduction in symptoms. Like, it, I don't know, 40% or so probably. And that nothing else had done that. So... Yeah. I mean, other than a, you know, like a numbing cortisone shot or I got like Botox injections in my neck. And so like, you know, stuff like that, that's actually, it's paralyzing the tissue. So that was the only sort of relief that I had gotten. This was the first time where something that I had done had resulted in me actually feeling better for any sort of an amount of time. Now, I will say that in the months after that, probably, I don't know, for the first couple of years, it was almost like every 8 or 9 months, I would sort of feel like, okay, I'm like 95% there. Maybe the other 5%, like I need to just, I'll go see a physical therapist and they'll help me get over the hump. So I go see them one time. They would give me a suggestion. I would do it. I would feel worse. I would go back and read some, you know, a couple pages out of the book And okay, then it's reinstilled, right? Yeah. So, and that's the thing is like this path is different for everybody. I get a lot of emails from people all around the world that have kind of varying degrees of acceptance around this. And overwhelmingly, I mean, the thought seems to be, hey, if it doesn't happen overnight, then it doesn't, then it can't be true. Or people will get very frustrated when they hear other people's stories about how, because I've had people on the show that they read the book on a Friday, they've been in pain 30 years, they're better by Monday, and it's never come back. Yeah. That's very rare, incredibly rare. And I think that maybe in the 80s or 90s, when Sarno had put out the first couple of books, I actually think that, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
No, 33.
Okay. Our generation, I think, is very different from people that would have read those books in the 80s or 90s. And it's because of the vast amount of information. I can go on YouTube and I can type neck pain or back pain or whatever, and there's 4,000 videos with everybody having a cure for them. And it's always something physical to do. That wasn't an option in the 80s and 90s. You could go to the library and you could check out a physical therapy book or whatever. But information wasn't so readily available. And I think that that's one of the big things that people would really need to do to feel better with a Sarno way of doing it is to kind of just, I had told you beforehand that like, I'm not a religious person, but there is a quote from Vinny on Jersey Shore, where he has a tattoo across his chest that says, let go, let God. And I did an entire episode where that was the concept. And I said, all it means to me is that I'm placing faith in that this thing is correct and this will work and I don't need to worry about anything else. And that perspective certainly changed a lot for me. And I use that for a lot of other things now that's not just pain or injury related or whatever. Just in general, like you really kind of don't have a lot of say in the things that are going to happen in your life and things just sort of happen. And so you can choose to kind of mull over to get upset about it or try to control it. But the reality is we've got 7 billion people on the planet. You don't have much control. Like you have 1/7 billionth of a percentage point of control, which is not that much.
Right. No, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I oftentimes wish I had control.
Yeah.
But if 2020 taught us anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Life hadn't already taught us.
Yeah. We got nothing. We don't know what we're doing.
We got nothing. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, the whole Sarno book cure. I think that's the thing that made me the most annoyed, because being somebody who tried a lot of like the functional integrative route, I did hear a lot of people. And so I did have like IBS and a lot of stomach issues. And I'll say right now today, I think a lot of my symptoms, I'm probably at about, with my like entire body symptoms, I'm like 98% good.
Yeah.
My vocal pain, I've never had any change in symptoms yet. But so, you know, reading like, yeah, I gave up gluten and my life changed forever. Things like that would just make me want to cringe, because I was like, you know, I've gone for months eating literally just vegetables, or like, you know, I did every elimination diet. I did every kind of thing. And so, yeah. So the book cure is an interesting one, but yeah, like you say, it is rare, but it feels like people love to talk about that one a lot.
Yeah.
Because that, maybe it's like, this is the selling point. Like there's a need to maybe sell that this stuff works or something. But so you said you had some immediate relief, and then how long did it take you to find where you are today?
I mean, it's tough to say. I think probably, because the thing is like, I would be, because it seemed like there was always something. And even to this day, I might wake up feeling something in my foot or something, whatever. But I think that the key point is just to remember, like, we're human beings. And, oh gosh, my nose is killing me. That Nicole Sachs says this beautifully. She always says that she has a cure for chronic pain. She doesn't have a cure for human pain. Yeah. And that some people just feel things differently. And sometimes, as again, I'm stealing another one from her, sometimes people feel things in their hearts and sometimes they feel it in their bodies. And so for me, being able to isolate and say, well, my foot hurts right now, my ankle or whatever, and not letting it go any further. Like as an example, earlier this year, probably in, I don't know, February, March or something, I was lifting and it was a weight that I had easily done like plenty of times. It was probably, I don't know, 80% of my one rep max or whatever. And it was like I got hit in the lower back with a hot bat or something, like literally hit the ground. I couldn't get out of the fetal position. It was probably an hour. And I army crawled to my cell phone and text a buddy of mine who knows all about this stuff. He's kind of like my TMS buddy. And had said, man, like, my back is killing me. Like I can't even straighten my legs. But again, if you would have talked to me 6 years ago or 7 years ago or whatever, and that same situation happened, like I would have called the ER in a heartbeat because it was so sharp and it was so, debilitating, like could not, I am not embellishing. I could not straighten either leg. And you know, that's like scary stuff. If somebody's not aware, and so I think that, you know, that's a big piece of it. So there's kind of always something, but most of the time it doesn't last longer than 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever. And I think that maybe the biggest thing is that in the months, so I had that shoulder surgery and then, you know, a couple days later, I started having all the spasm issues. I gave up strength training, CrossFit, weightlifting, everything but walking around a track. I had given up entirely when that happened because I said, like, I just went through and did all this shoulder stuff. I'm not doing anything until I find somebody that can fix me. When I found the Sarno, so I found the Sarno book on a Thursday or Friday, read it through the weekend, and I went back to my gym, my former gym before the pandemic, which was the most expensive gym in the area. And I pre-purchased 3 months worth of dues, worth of training, right? So it's like now you're all in. You're as in as you can be monetarily. And I haven't stopped. And I haven't even that thing with my back a few months ago, I took my normal rest day because it was due to be the very next day. I rest on the same 2 days every week. But I was back doing bench and everything like that a couple days later. And so I haven't had an injury. And one other thing too is like, and you've probably done this too, I've gone back. And when I read the Sarno book, one of the things that I really used to convince me that, hey, this is true is going back and making an inventory of what's every symptom that I can remember going back to however long, how many years. And then what was going on in my life at that time. And I was just finding this 1-to-1 ratio of something was always going on when I would have an issue. And in particular, sales is my day job. And the end of every quarter, I would sustain some kind of a knee injury. And I just thought that it was a coincidence, you know, forever. I just didn't pay any mind to it. I just thought I'm an athlete and this happens and I go and get my painkillers and I take a couple weeks off and then I'm fine and, you know, whatever. I haven't had that knee issue since I read that book. And that was so it literally happened every 3 months for 7 straight years. So like clockwork. And I haven't had it since. And that was in July of 2017. So it's been, by the time you and I are talking about this, it's been almost 5 years and I haven't had that knee issue, you know?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. So I know that there are so many ways that people approach TMS now, or just mind body pain. I just recently actually did Dan Ratner's, one of his, seminars.
Yeah.
And so that was just an interesting way of looking at it as well. I hadn't really looked at it, you know, from that perspective. I know a lot of Nicole's work. I know, Dan Buglio, like there's so many people that have so many routes. What are some of the things that you did? And also, do you have anything for people to encourage them, like a way to start? Cause it can be, I know, I'm sure like you, like I talk about it now all the time to everybody I know, especially, you know, when they're going through stuff. My mom's super into it now too. And so we talk about it all the time. But like a good, what did you do personally? And then after that, I would love to talk about just like a good place for people to start because it can be really overwhelming.
Yeah. So in the beginning, it was really just thinking about it. I mean, because Sarno, the first couple of Sarno's books, there was no work to do. There was nothing.
Yeah.
It was just, this is all, not theoretical is not what I mean, but it was just, we're talking about it, but that's about it. Yeah. And then his third book, he had started introducing a journaling concept. And I think that his was around like making a daily list of things that are overly stressful or you find angering in your life and then spending 20 minutes free writing about it. And that was kind of the first thing that I did. I don't recall buying like any programs outside of, so one of the lesser, I think that I've read so many books on this topic now. And I think that a lot of the things that are suggested, I think, are difficult for a lot of people to do. Like Nicole Sachs is probably the easiest and simplest and most straightforward. Like journal 20 minutes, you know, say everything that you've got to say, go uncensored, do all that. I call it cutting a promo because I'm a pro wrestling nerd and that's what they call it. Whenever you're just unloading on somebody and that's what intent of it is. I would also talk about listening to angry rap music. You listen to Eminem just blast somebody for 30 minutes. Yeah. Like, you know, it'll help bring out some anger in you, some anger emotion in you. But I've read so many books on this topic, and I think that one of the really underestimated ones is by Adam Heller, which is called Zero Pain Now, because his entire methodology, and he has like things to prompt you to do, like you can write and you can do this, and he has a workbook and all that. But his is entirely around feeling emotions in the body and asking yourself over and over again, what is it that you're feeling? Which is a really hard and raw thing for people to do. And I know in the very beginning for me, like I would write out that I was feeling angry, but I was never connecting it to how I actually like viscerally felt. And I think that the biggest reason that this happens to people, and again, everybody's got it, whether, you know, you're not you specifically, your acne issues are my back issues. John's ankle is my wrist, right? So like everybody's got something. So that's what I was thinking about earlier when you were talking about, you know, giving up, or I gave up gluten and all my issues went away. People that say stuff like that, I would say really digging in and asking them what else popped up like around that time. So maybe you did get rid of this, but like what else started? And I would guarantee if they're telling the truth, something else did pop up. But I think that a big reason why this occurs to so many people, particularly in that age group that Sarno talked about, which was ages 30 to 60. Hello, millennials. Like that's where we're at. is that you kind of get hardened on the outside and you have this real separation between how you are feeling and the things that are going on outside, because, you know, we're adults now. We can't get too wound up about certain things and all this kind of stuff. And a lot of this does go all the way back to childhood. What were the things that you observed as a little kid? Yeah. What was the way that your mom or dad interacted or showed up in the world? Like one example, and I have a great relationship with my parents, but I know, like, you know, as a little kid, I had several siblings. One of my siblings in particular was pretty problematic for the family a lot of times. And he sort of caused a lot of issues in the family where there was just kind of a lot of infighting. And so my strategy as a little kid a lot of times was like not be problematic in any particular way. So be on the straight and narrow, be on the straight and path, and don't make mistakes. Not because anybody told me to be that way, but because the other guy is causing so much. He's sort of taking up the entire quota of being a jerk in the family. So I can't use any of the jerk quota. So you kind of just become hardened to it over time. And it's not really anybody's fault, right? That was my decision. So we just sort of disconnect entirely from our feelings and our body and ourselves and all that stuff. So Alan Gordon and in fact, everybody he's taught at the Pain Psychology Center are such a gift, because so much of what they talk about is feeling things in the body and really being able to do that. Like, it is a really hard skill. I've done entire episodes about somatic tracking or somatic experiencing. And when I do it and I really get in tune, because I think it to me, it just takes an enormous amount of energy. I can only do it for 2 or 3 minutes and I'm smoked by the end of it. Whereas like I observe my daughters, right? I have a 7-year-old and I have a 4-year-old. And when they get really upset about something, like you can see it in their bodies. You can see there's, you know, they may shake, they may cry. You can see things welling up in their face. You see swelling in the cheeks, like all this stuff. Whereas you and I, likely, if you were to talk to either one of us a few years ago, if I did something that made you really upset, you can probably poker face it really, really well. Because we've disconnected entirely. And I think that that's the biggest theme for most people, and why so much of this just sounds so ridiculous to so many people, is because it's tough for them to imagine. But like, you really do kind of, one thing that a therapist told me once, is he was talking about me as a really, really young kid, and I was pretty overweight up until I was about 17. As he had said, you know, sometimes when you're having a difficult time, if you can just imagine yourself going back to being a kid and just putting an arm around Tim and saying it's going to be okay. Like, that's kind of a lot of where I visualize a lot of this stuff now is, you know, just trying to reconnect to who was I before I got all hard and yeah, you know, not totally. not like the game hard or Lil Wayne hard or whatever. I'm just like, but more so just, you know, at what point in time did I lose my way as a feeling being, like, they're called feelings for a reason, right? Like, I feel totally. My jacket, but if you ask people to describe, tell me what a feeling is, very rarely is anybody going to say, like, it's a sensation within the body, when, like, at its absolute core, like, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's so good. I think I'm same. So, like, growing up, I'm definitely a people pleaser.
Yeah.
And yeah, showing anger, it's never been like taught to me that to be angry is bad. Same. I think it was just something that I developed over time. And I, growing up, like, I had an attitude. I would tell people off that I didn't know. Like, I definitely had an attitude. And then I think it was like after junior high, I just became a lot more passive, a lot more like fearful to say what it was that I was thinking, different things like that. And so I remember hearing, I think it was Dan Ratner talking about like how we've even in our language and society, like, you know, we'll say things like, like I feel that in my gut, or, you know, that you're a pain in the neck, or like different things that we've just, you know, put into like our daily language. But I realized, I was like, man, I carry so much anger in my stomach. Like, I started doing somatic tracking. I got to do a phone call with Alan Gordon, which was really cool.
That's awesome.
And so yeah, we did one of those somatic tracking exercises, and it was really difficult. I didn't enjoy it. Like, doing somatic tracking is not enjoyable to me.
Yeah.
Like you were saying. But it is interesting when you finally sit in your body and you even just, you know, it's some of that therapy stuff, but it's like, what do I feel? What is my body saying to me right now? Simple things that I feel like we learned when we were little too.
Yep.
Like, I feel like I always heard, like, you know, listen to your body. If you can't, you know, if you need rest, like those kind of things we were taught when we were younger, or I just naturally, you know, glean that from society and such. It is so interesting at some point in life when we kind of lose some of our, I mean, right. It's innocence. Like, there's innocence in childhood.
Yeah.
And probably a little less, like you were saying, a little less, you know, being cynical, a little less jadedness.
Yeah.
Some of those things. And so, you know, believing some things can be easier.
Well, when I've read, like, with the pandemic, the last 2.5 years, like, my daughter was home quite a bit, doing distance learning. And so when I would observe her doing her social emotional, like, I don't know, classes, units, whatever, the curriculum, I was like, I was shocked and sort of not shocked that there's so much of it that revolves around feelings in the body. And I'm like, I don't remember any of this when I was 6 or 7 years old. Maybe it was there, but I don't remember it being there. Like, I don't even, I don't recall. I'm sure that, like, kids intrinsically do it, I think. I think that's like part of the way that evolution has happened with humans, particularly children. Is that they feel, that's why little kids cry a lot. That's why, cause like, it's visceral. They allow themselves to do that. But I mean, how many times as an adult, like, if you're observing a friend and they're crying and you say, well, don't cry. Like, that's just something that we, for whatever reason, started doing over time. And it's very tough. Like, as an adult, my wife and I talk a lot about this, that, when someone comes to you, just a friend comes to you with a problem and they tell you what the problem is, the natural inclination is always for us to say, you know, well, maybe in a nicer way, but like, pucker up, buttercup, basically. Or trying to give a solution. But again, both of those things are really like, you just need to be aware that there's a problem and experience it yourself. So when we hear about each other's problems or whatever, we really have to think about, like, not giving a solution to the person that's coming and telling you that, or not telling them, hey, it's all going to be okay, or you should be, you know, feel better or pep up or whatever the case is. And just acknowledging that it's there. Cause that's like, that's what the secret to this stuff is. It's very simple. Like, the TMS stuff and grasping it and neuroplastic pain and mind body and all that stuff. Very simple, incredibly hard though. Very simple, incredibly hard.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So going back to some of that stuff, cause I feel like some people can also start saying conflicting things at times, like, is what I've been noticing in my own journey. So what are just some simple things that you found that have been really helpful for yourself or for people that you talk to?
Yeah. So, Gosh, there's going to be no rhyme or reason or order or any of this. It's going to be as they come to me. But honestly, one of the bigger ones is one of the things that we were talking about earlier, which was like you have little to no control of anything in this world. So just sort of letting go. I think that that's a big element of it. And that applies across the board. Dr. David Hanscom had told me the story on the first podcast I did with him about 3.5 years ago, where he had said he had this patient came in, 65 years old. They've been in a wheelchair for 25 years. They came and saw him. They've had several surgeries, And then he gave them his book and he said, read this book, follow it, come back, see me in 12 weeks. She comes back, walks in, no wheelchair, even though she'd only been in a wheelchair for 20 years or whatever. And he's like, what happened? And she said, I forgave everyone. And that was it. So like just letting go is such a big, is such a big part of it. The other thing I think is just being able to overall like slow down life. One of the phrases that I've adopted, and I stole this from Kramer on Seinfeld. I use it all the time, but whenever I'm thinking like I need to do something faster or do it quicker or, you know, get somewhere or think about something or come up with a solution faster. He had this great phrase because he never had a job and he like that's sort of his gimmick is, you know, he always like he didn't have to be in a hurry for anything. He would just say, I've got time. And that's sort of what I keep telling myself on the inside is like, you got time. Yeah, because like, yeah, I think just overall slowing down kind of everything and recognizing that, you know, everything doesn't have to be a huge rush and just being able to slow it down and kind of put things into perspective, I think is a bigger part of that. So, I mean, those are honestly like, those are some of the bigger ones that I feel like. The, and again, they're so just like with understanding this stuff overall, very simple, but very tough.
Totally. Yeah. No, that's good. Because I think, so I did a lot of the journaling and I found that it was helpful at first. And then I felt like it kind of ran its course. And I remember my therapist just saying like, don't force something that maybe isn't serving its purpose as it did. Like, you know, everything is evolving. So sometimes maybe journaling might be really helpful. And then other times maybe somatic tracking might be really helpful. My therapist gave me a couple that she's recorded. And so sometimes when I'm driving, I have, I notice my symptoms pop up a lot of times when it comes to performing, like even still, you know, I'm called to do, you know, certain calibers of gigs that I know that I am qualified for and I can do it, but still, you know, on the drive to, or the morning, the day of, I will have every symptom pop up. My throat is just on, like, it hurts so badly. And so I'll definitely gauge into some somatic tracking stuff as I'm driving. Because I'm just trying to, like get into my body, but get into my feelings too. Did you notice, I forget her name, but I had like a thought work coach that I listened to. And she said, sometimes when you journey into something new, it's like you've turned the light on in the attic and you see how messy it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my gosh, oh crap. I don't even know where to start.
But, yeah.
You know, did you notice that when you became aware of like why symptoms can be mind body? I feel like I noticed more. Like I feel like I became very more aware of my symptoms, even though I had a better, I've learned to have a better attitude about it. Like the other day I was running, I'm starting to train for a triathlon.
Oh, awesome.
So I was running and this is a big thing I've done. I grew up a swimmer and a water polo player. So I was very active growing up, you know, before I got diagnosed with my different illnesses. But I noticed it felt like my calf teared. Like it just, it was really painful and I had to stop and I sat down on the sidewalk because it was so painful. And then I was thinking about it and I was like, okay, I have, you know, so-and-so tomorrow. I'm actually really nervous about that. I had a couple conversations that kind of had a little conflict involved in them. And so I was still a little reeling from that. And then triathlon training in itself, I think I'm putting a lot of pressure on it because it's this first big, really, really physical thing that I'm doing. So I thought about it and I was like, okay, I'm going to not run. I'll keep walking though. And I wasn't freaked out about it. I was just like, all right, this kind of makes sense. This is in part. And so then I, you know, I walked and then I realized later in the day, I didn't even feel the pain anymore. But I do notice that I'm super, sometimes I can be hyper aware.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, but that's okay. Oh, but that's okay too. Yeah. Did you notice that?
Yeah. And I still notice that. I think that, because again, if we go back to the very beginning of all this and really like where the solution lies is that it is a it's a mechanism of repressing a feeling and a feeling in the body, right? So if you were to go on about your day and your shoulder was hurting and you said, oh, I'm not going to think about that. You're sort of doing the thing that sort of got you into all this to begin with.
Right.
So you're repressing, right? Whereas the opposite of repression is experience. And so if you can experience that and say, oh, my shoulder hurts, but it's no big deal, you're doing the acknowledgement and the thing that has to happen. Because like ultimately that's the thing that's missing, is trying to ignore it, or move past it or whatever. I just become more and more convinced about this the more episodes that I do. I've done almost all of them have been about an hour long. I've done 206 podcast episodes. And I become more convinced every single week that everything has a mind. Well, just about everything, 99% of things have a mind body origin in some case. And so I mean, I get that stuff all the time, and I think like hypervigilance, is not a good thing to have, I think, but also at the same time, like all you're doing is being aware of your feelings and the feelings in your body.
Yeah.
Sometimes again, it's showing up for you in your calf. Sometimes it's showing up for you in your shoulder. I think that being able to, have that hypervigilance and feel the feeling, acknowledge that it's there, but know that you're going to be okay. Like that's eventually that's going to become an automatic thing, and it'll happen so fast that you won't even have to really stop and think about it. Because it's really just the acknowledgement part is the key.
Yeah, that's good. And like you were saying earlier, sometimes we're so uncomfortable with sitting with our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So that even right there, instead of like being able to just keep moving past it, we have to sit with it sometimes, even as quickly as it might be, but it is still uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 206 episodes. Congrats. That's amazing.
Thanks.
That's really amazing. What would you say is like some of the biggest hangups of people when it comes to finding most of their symptom relief?
So I think the biggest one to me is if they have imaging, or they have something that shows a problem, a perceived problem. One thing over time that I've thought about is like, and this isn't like a new revelation, but remembering all these times in my life where I did the inventory of the different symptoms, but even one thing that I had asked the surgeon who did my shoulder, I went in for one of the checkup appointments, and the surgeon had left the room for something. I don't remember what it was, but the PA was in there. So the guy was doing his residency, and I asked some question about rotator cuffs or something, because I had, you know, that was one of the repairs I had. And he's made some comment like 70% of people over 35, if you image them, have a torn rotator cuff. And he's like, but very few have symptoms. And I was thinking back like, my gosh, like he said it, like he totally said it. So I think that that's one big thing. And again, accessibility of information is problematic in this case, because as an athlete, I'm very aware of neck injuries. I'm very aware of baseball players getting Tommy John. I'm very aware of football players having shoulder issues. So like knowing that those things exist, I think ultimately slips into the subconscious, and you start just, you know, you think like a runner gets, what's that called? Plantar fasciitis. So, right, like we know this is a thing, and runners tend to get it. But the problem is like that doesn't, like that correlation doesn't necessarily equal causation. We need to kind of remember that too. So I think having imaging or a diagnosed problem from somebody in a white coat is the biggest thing for people to get over. The other thing is just the influence of people around you. If you've always told your parents, you've always told your siblings, you've always told your friends like, oh, my back hurts today or whatever, they're going to start asking you about it fairly frequently. And because of this, one of Dr. Hanscom's requirements to even work with him when he was practicing was that your immediate family had to come into an appointment, and you all had to make an agreement that nobody talks about Whitney's back issue for 12 weeks. You're not allowed to say anything about it.
Yeah.
Because just that, like that's amazing. The only positive maybe to come out of COVID is that there have been less family gatherings, because families trigger each other. And the first thing that I do notice in the times we have gotten together is all seven of them are standing around each other, and they're all talking about what hurts today and what their, you know, what, like what physical issues it is that they have. And whenever we leave those events, I just turn to my wife and I'm just like, I'm so glad this doesn't happen that often. It's tough in October, November, December, because they're all stacked on top of each other. But usually during the year, you get a few months away from that. But, I'm just, in fact, my mom told me the other day, we were talking about different family members, and she acknowledged that because she was sure she had COVID. I told her the story of about a year or so ago. I had like every COVID symptom. I was convinced I had it. It had been going on for several days. My wife had said to me, what if this is just like all the other stuff, the elbow, the, you know, the biceps, the knee, the back, all this. It's like, what if it's that? Mm-hmm. Like, Whitney, these went on for 5 or 6 days, probably, these symptoms. I felt miserable. Within an hour, every symptom was gone. I said, okay, I'm going to go get a rapid test just to be sure.
Yeah,
and right. It was negative, of course. But like the biggest thing is the symptomatology waned and it was gone. So I don't know. Being able to slow down those racing thoughts, I think, was pivotal as well. So I think it's imaging and the stories that people tell each other and tell themselves over time sort of locks that into place, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I was reading a study that was, just because you said it, talking about just different COVID deaths, and one of the highest factors had to do with like mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, lots of the actual physical health stuff, but like mental health was just a big one. And that I was listening to Nicole Sachs' latest episode with some of the long haul COVID symptoms. And it is just crazy thinking about like how the mind body works just in like every facet of like health symptoms. But how amazing that you were able to catch that, or your wife was able to catch that. How, if you don't mind asking, like, how does your family navigate some of this? Like your outside family, you were saying, they talk about their pains. Like, is it something you have been able to like really share with your own community, or is it more?
My family outside of the house thinks I'm kind of a crock, I think.
Okay.
At least when it comes to this stuff. I don't acknowledge the, like, okay, again, so 206 episodes, about 15,000 people around the world listen every single week. I've had 25 regular monthly donors for 3 years. I have regular sponsors for the show. So like, even though it's a hobby, it still helps pay for things and, you know, gives me pleasure and people know about it. And you on iTunes, there's 200 reviews. It's got 5 out of 5 stars. Like, it's not nothing. But nobody in my family.
You're changing lives. Yeah. You are changing people's lives.
But I don't talk about it with my family because on Mother's Day a couple of years ago, I gave my mom the MindBody prescription. And she said, she opened it, like read the first 2 sentences, and she handed it, put it back on the table and said, you know, my pain is real. And like, so that's kind of like, my brother's been talking about, he got rear-ended at 5 miles an hour in 2013. He's like still talking about issues from that. So I don't really talk about it with many people inside the house. If I'm prompted or asked, like a neighbor 2 doors down, he'll whenever we see each other at the mailbox or whatever, he'll ask me how the podcast is coming along. But outside of that, I don't really share it. When I first learned about it, I told everybody. And then because it made such a dramatic change in my life. But then it was just kind of like, the reception's so negative on this, and it's not doing anything for anybody. If they come to me, I will help them. But like, and I'll have people that pop up every few months, people that I've known for years. Like there's a, this woman she's a local CrossFit athlete. She's probably 40 years old, 45, something like that. I got this really nice email from her about a year and a half ago. We had only been friends on Facebook because she was a local athlete. And then coincidentally, I got a tankless water heater put in about 3 years ago. The plumber shows up. His last name seems familiar. I'm like, do you know Rachel? And they're married, their husband and wife. And so it was just a small world in that way. But she sends me this nice message that she had been having this, I think it was an elbow and bicep and shoulder problem that had been going on. And she had given up powerlifting and she was a big competitor. She listened to some podcasts. She read Sarno's book. A month later, she was without pain. She now holds world records in rowing. She holds world records in powerlifting. And that's all stuff that's happened since that. So that was somebody that I didn't even know was listening that was listening. So stuff like that is super cool because, you don't, even though I'm not talking about, I don't know how these people find me, but it's just like how I get emails from people that live in like Burkina Faso. I couldn't even tell you where that is on a map. I didn't know where Malta was until I got an email from a potential sponsor. And then I look up and see it's a tiny island just outside of Italy, South Korea, Japan. Like I get messages all the time from people in these different pockets of the world. So I don't know how they're finding it, but they are. But I don't talk about it outside of this house.
Got you. Have you found any pressure to like stay healed? Like now that you are kind of seen as, I've noticed in myself, like just with the people I've been sharing it with, and they're starting to find some symptom relief. And I found, you know, a lot other than my voice stuff, this pressure to like, I need to show that it works. So I need to get better. I don't know. Do you struggle with that at all?
Not anymore. Yeah, maybe the first couple months of doing the show, I would. Yeah. But the whole reality is, again, like you may have a cure for chronic, the chronicity around it. So whatever you used to, you know, years ago, whatever you used to wake up with and feel day after day after day was probably always the same thing. You don't have that anymore. So even if a symptom pops up or symptoms pop up, we talked about it earlier, you're training for something, you feel something in your shoulder, your calf or whatever, and you acknowledge it and it goes away. Like that's cured to me, because that's knowing the root of the problem. That's knowing how to address the problem. And I think maybe the biggest part of it is not freaking out at the problem. Not just the amount of money that has been saved from going to doctors or therapists or like physical therapists or whatever, but the time overall savings too. And just the, because I'm telling you, like, for months and months and months, it was the last thing I would research before I went to bed was, where's this pain issue coming from? It was the first thing I looked at when I got ready in the morning. And then throughout the workday, if I had like one screen would have my work stuff, the other screen would have like some medical journal from the 80s about some obscure ligament that I thought maybe, hey, this is the problem. Just to have that peace of mind is very, and also like it's enabled me to just take far more risks and generally have more fun. It's one, I coach Zoe, my older daughter's soccer team. And one thing I always tell her, like if she ever is super sore after doing something or gets hurt in a game or whatever, like I'm always like, listen, the times when you are having the most fun and being fulfilled the most, you are going to have a risk and you are going to get hurt. So like that's, I ride, it's not that I'm reckless, but like I ride an electric skateboard faster than I should. I ride a motorcycle in the woods. I did a 5-day solo motorcycle road trip, which I never would have done prior to any of this. A lot of it was in national forests. So like crossing Oregon into California, I did that entirely off road, off the grid, no cell service, could have been attacked by a mountain lion, could have died, whatever. And those are the thoughts that I would have had years ago. But instead it's just become like, hey, whatever happens, happens. Like that's invaluable, especially at, at 35. Like I feel like my soul in a lot of ways is younger and more virile now than it was when I was like 25.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you mind expanding on that a little bit? It does seem that often we get symptoms in the things that we enjoy the most. So like I was a swimmer, water polo player, tore my rotator cuffs. You hear a lot of times like guys who used to golf, guys who used to play ball, you know, like all of these different things, it tends to show up in the things that we do really enjoy.
Yeah. So I'm so glad you said this. So if anybody's listening to this and they're thinking, hey, I want to go check out the guy's podcast, the first episode I always tell people to start with is the interview I did with Dr. Howard Schubiner in the middle of 2019, because he was asking me about when my pain problems, when they began, when did I notice them? And I had said weightlifting and leaning forward, grabbing the controls on my motorcycle. And he said, so let me ask you, did your pain have your attention? And he said, because if you're prevented from doing the things that you love, it's got like it's got your attention. So that's the answer. Like, yeah, I mean, beginning, middle and end, like that's the answer.
It has your attention. Yeah. And is that, would you say that's like your brain wanting you to stay focused on that? Would that be more like your nervous system? Sometimes I can get caught up in like, what is my brain saying? But what is my body saying? And I know it's the same, like your mind body. Dan Ratner says your body is just an extension of your brain.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
But sometimes I can get a little confused on like the, okay, why are you making, why are you putting all my attention into this?
Yeah. So oftentimes I think when people are very busy and entrenched in something creative or doing, you know, just do like, whether it's singing or whatever, like Lady Gaga, who is might be my biggest crush on planet Earth that I'm not married to, for a lot of reasons. She did that documentary 5'2" or whatever a few years ago on Netflix. And one thing she talked about was having this intense fibromyalgia issues moments before going on stage. And you see these scenes of her in a bathtub getting constant massages, whatever the case is. Then she talks about going out on stage. She says she feels nothing during the performance, deeply entrenched, right? And then she comes back through the, you know, she comes down off the high or whatever and then starts feeling symptoms again. Like, how the hell else could you explain that? Then it has to do with something that's going on. The brain's saying something. You're deeply entrenched. You're in this. Like, I remember. So when I was super deep in pain, like the bad old days, right? Like that particular time when I was having all the spasms and all that kind of stuff. And I remember I remember having no real good explanation for this when it happened, but then afterwards discovering Sarno and reading Alan Gordon stuff and all that, having a great explanation for it. So I was building something, like I'm not handy. I was building something, you know, with like real tools and hammers and wood and all this kind of stuff. And I'd spent like 3 or 4 hours on it, and all my symptoms were gone when I did that. Everything freed up. I was totally loose. I felt like a 15-year-old again. And then the task was done, and an hour or two later, I started stiffening back up again and having all the same neurological symptoms I'd been having for months. I couldn't explain that at the time. I would use these excuses like, oh, I was working hard and I was working fast, so my fascia was warmed up and that's why it was feeling so loose, and all, you know, all the things that we say to justify to explain. But then as time went on, and like Steve Ozanich's book, he talks about being entrenched in creative activities or activities in general and people not feeling pain. And I would challenge anybody that has a lot of physical issues, if they are deeply entrenched in something creative, not like... Mm-hmm. Motorcycling's fun. It's not really a creative outlet, but I do find like art, I think, is creative. Building, I think, is creative. Music, I think, is creative. If they can get deeply entrenched in something like that, it could be an adult coloring book, like whatever. I find that a lot of the symptomatology will either diminish or completely go away while you're entrenched in that. And I think it's just because that part of your brain is now being used solely for one other thing, and it doesn't really have the attention span.
Yeah.
I mean, brains are so primitive, like that's a whole another part of the discussion, is you have this intersection of like, you have like what is the id crave, meaning like there's that person inside of Whitney that's a lot like Bart Simpson, that's like a total jerk and wants to tell people off and wants to do all this, but then like the ego side of Whitney, which can't allow her to do any of that kind of stuff, like you're the kind person, you're the great musician, you have the wonderful hair, you have, you know, all this kind of stuff. So the intersection of those things, the conflict of those things, is where TMS begins. There's a great illustration of it in Steve Ozanich's book, if anybody's curious on what's he talking about. But that's, the conflict is where the problem is.
Yeah, that's good. I was reading a study the other day, and they call it, I forget what they call it, but there's some type of focus when you do engage in something creative. And they were saying that you kind of get to this zen-like state, like if you were doing yoga and certain things, because it's like your attention is like, you're so focused on what you're doing, you're less distracted, like, and it was an interesting thing that they, you know, depression and anxiety levels of people who engage in creative things, you know, all this, like, it goes way down. So it's so, that's so powerful. It's so exciting.
Well, and if people have a tough time thinking of creative things they can do if they don't find themselves overly creative, like it can also just be something like going for hike in the woods, and the big difference between, I mean, maybe you don't want to go out in the middle of nowhere without a cell phone, but put it in airplane mode and have no music on and just experiencing the senses that are around you versus, you know, checking your phone every 2 minutes while you're on a walk or looking at Instagram or texting people or whatever, is a tremendous difference just in overall, I think, how it is that you feel. So again, you know, not to knock on our generation, but the accessibility of information just has, I think so many negatives, and I think that's a part of the equation too.
Totally, no, that's good. Well, we just had an hour. That went by really fast.
Yeah, it did.
Is there any last little nuggets that you would, that you tend to tell? I think I probably listened to like 203 of your episodes. I don't know if I'm at 206. I'm close. I'm getting there. But if there's just something that you feel people could really just benefit from, obviously, I'm going to link everything that you do and all these different resources, but anything that you would find valuable to just leave us off with.
I don't know if there's anything specific other than like, honestly, being able to figure out a way or understanding that a feeling, like feeling something in the body, like that's what feelings are. And, you know, not ignoring those, acknowledging them and moving on. I mean, really, that's kind of the simplest part of it. And some people need tremendous examples of this happening. There's a great website, the TMS Wiki. It has a literal success stories database that you can go in there, you can look for whatever your particular symptom is, and it's just stories of all this. There's also thankyousarno.org or thankyousarno.org. But it's 200 letters that people wrote Dr. Sarno just before he died of all the different things that they'd been cured of. It's pretty wild to see some of these stories over time, things that didn't seem at all possible. I'm so disconnected in a lot of ways from like the Western medical model that, I mean, in a lot of ways, the pandemic's been very, been kind of crazy in that sense of like, I'm very like pro science. I'm, you know, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I also know that I've been duped in a lot of ways in the past with a lot of this stuff. So I don't know. It's, I guess that would be the biggest thing is that feel your feelings is probably where I would say is the biggest, the biggest thing you can do. Yeah.
And that's good. And then also I wanted to end it with a disclaimer that you and so many others also say, like, always go get checked out by a doctor first. If there is something structural, like, that helps with the belief part. And
Again, like, going to see a doctor, I think it's a great thing to do. But at the same time, going with the caveat of knowing, like, going back to that PA, my surgeon's PA saying, you know, 70% of people have a torn rotator cuff and don't know it. And the same thing applies with disc herniations. I think it's something like 85%. I had another internal medicine doctor who I had asked her, what do you think for food intolerances? Mm-hmm. What do you think the prevalence of true food intolerances are that are not mind-body, or sorry, that are mind-body? And she said, aside from celiac disease, she thinks they all are mind-body. So, you know, they could find something, but at the same time, Sarno's very, this never changes in his book, but it's basically like tumors, infections, cancer, and I think that might be it. Outside of that, they're things that shouldn't have chronicity tied to them. I mean, even like the symptoms of autoimmune diseases as well. So.
Yeah. No, that's so good. Well, Eddie with an I-E, not a Y.
No, Eddie with a Y, not an I-E.
Eddie with a Y. Man. Why am I? Eddie with a Y.
That's okay. Never going to let you live it down. Yeah.
God, I told him, I said, I totally understand if you want to cancel this interview. It's so offensive.
Yeah.
And then I did it again.
Yeah.
But thank you, dude. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.